Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Full Faith and Credit Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 7, 2016, the Supreme Court decided V.L. versus E.L., a case involving an interstate dispute over custody of a child raised by a same-sex couple. A Georgia court entered a final judgment of adoption, making petitioner V.L. a legal parent of the children that she and respondent E.L., her same-sex partner, had raised together from birth. V.L. and E.L. later separated while living in Alabama. V.L. asked the Alabama courts to enforce the Georgia judgment and grant her custody or visitation rights. The Alabama Supreme Court refused, holding that the Full Faith and Credit Clause of the United States Constitution did not require the Alabama courts to respect the Georgia judgment. By a vote of 8-0, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Alabama Supreme Court and remanded the case, holding in a per curiam opinion that the Alabama Supreme Court erred in refusing to grant the Georgia adoption judgment full faith and credit. To discuss the case, we have Robin Fretwell Wilson, who is the Roger and Stephanie Joslin Professor of Law and Director of the Program in Family Law and Policy at the University of Illinois College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Wilson.
So we like to think of the United States Supreme Court as especially divided in these times. There's a lot of discussion of 5-4 decisions. I think it's remarkable that V.L. versus E.L. comes from the court as a unanimous per curiam decision of the court, with the members speaking in a single voice. There are no dissents or concurrences. And they're speaking to a crucial question, whether an adoption decree should be respected across the United States. One would think that that would be a no-brainer in some ways. So the Constitution provides that full faith and credit is to be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. And that's interesting because adoption is affected by a judicial decree. So one would think that this decision would have been an easy one, and ultimately it turned out to be an easy one for the court. I'm going to unpack why full faith and credit did require a little bit of analysis in this particular case and describe those facts. But before I do that, let me just contrast that with questions about same-sex marriage across the country before that was ultimately resolved in the Obergefell decision. Marriage is a status. It's not a judicially decreed thing. It's not reflected in an order of a state. And so until Obergefell created a single uniform rule, same-sex marriage didn't have to be respected across the 50 states. It would now after Obergefell. Adoption's always been different because it's done in an order and it falls within the ambit of full faith and credit. In EL versus VL, what we have is a contest between two unmarried women who ended up creating a family together with assisted conception. In fact, they created three children. One was born in 2002, SL, and then they had a pair of twins later, NL and HL, in 2004. And these folks lived in Alabama from 1995 to 2011 in a place called Hoover. And after they invariably, in family law, break up, just like other heterosexual families do, one of the parents, EL, the biological parent of these children, wanted to preclude her former partner, VL, who was a non-biological, what we would call today a social parent to these children, from seeing them. And VL has helped tremendously in this regard, in assuring access to the children that she created together with EL, by the fact that they had taken a step, as the court said, to, quote, give legal status to that relationship between VL and those kids. And that legal status was the fact that VL formally adopted them. Now, I'm sure many of your listeners will immediately think they adopted them in Alabama. How can that be? And the answer is they didn't adopt them in Alabama. Instead, they trucked over to Georgia, and they jumped through some hoops to establish residency in Georgia, which is the test for whether the adoption could be done. You had to be a bona fide legal resident of Georgia. And that involved renting a house for 6 months, going through a home study, and that process begins in 2006. It's completed in 2007, and a Georgia court awards an adoption decree between VL and these children after finding that VL qualified. And as I say, this only hits the fan when they go back to Alabama. They live from 2007 until 2011 when they break up. And it's at that point that EL says no to VL actually having parental rights or even visitation. And this starts working its way through the Alabama courts. Now, in the family court in the county that they lived in, this wasn't a really hard question. The trial court awarded visitation to VL, probably should have awarded straight-up custody because she's not what's called a, quote, third party. As an adoptive parent, she would have all the rights of any other biological or legal parent. But in any event, EL appeals the visitation order to the Alabama Court of Appeals, and there they say that the family court had erred by failing to conduct an evidentiary hearing before awarding VL visitation rights, and they kick it back down to the family court to do that necessary work, but otherwise to give VL visitation rights if that's warranted by the hearing. And then this then gets appealed to the Alabama Supreme Court, and they just reverse. And what's interesting here for questions of full faith and credit and the status of adoption decrees across the country is Alabama wanted to do a hard look behind what the original Georgia adoption court did. In other words, reading Georgia statutes, the Alabama court says, wait a minute, Georgia did not have the authority and under its own statutes, the subject matter jurisdiction, to enter this decree. And they leverage in particular two pieces of adoption law in Georgia. One of those is about something that we call second parent adoption. And this is the idea that if I was married to, let's say, Glenn, and I want to adopt a child, I want him to adopt my biological child. In the normal adoption context, when we put a child up for adoption, we eliminate the prior parental relationships. In fact, I am an adopted child. So to give you a specific example, when my birth parents put me up for adoption, both of their relationships get wiped away, and two new relationships to my parents today, my actual parents and what would be called my adoptive parents, are put in place of the two old ones. We call that sort of an idea of a cutoff. You cut off the prior relationships, you put in place new ones. Well, in the blended families that we find ourselves in the United States today, sometimes one person comes into the new relationship with a biological child already and wants the new partner to adopt them. And many states recognizing stepfamily situations basically said, we're not going to have a complete cutoff rule. In other words, the biological parent doesn't have to lose their rights in order to adopt and have them be reestablished with a new partner. That kind of makes sense because, you know, at the end we're trying to establish two legal relationships to a child when we first had one. No point in jumping through a cutoff of the one in order to establish the two. And that's just step-parent adoption rules. Well, what happens with the Alabama Supreme Court is they read the Georgia statutes as saying, well, that move, step-parent adoption, is limited to heterosexual married partners, and it was not properly done. So if it was not properly done, the court did not have subject matter jurisdiction, and that means that we, Alabama, do not have to respect that decree. I'm going to come back to what the Supreme Court has to say about that claim in just a second. But let me talk about the second Georgia statute that the Alabama Supreme Court wants to read very strictly as saying that the original adoption decree could not have been awarded. And this is the idea about being a bona fide resident. You know, essentially the Alabama Supreme Court says the Georgia court could not award this decree because VL and EL went to Georgia in effect to, trigger their statutes to get an adoption that they couldn't get in Alabama and that was wrongfully awarded. Now, the trouble is when they get to the Supreme Court says, true, you know, you don't have to give full faith and credit to something if there was no subject matter jurisdiction. But that full faith and credit clause of the Constitution precludes any inquiry into the merits of the cause of action, the logic or consistency of the decision, or the validity of the legal principles on which the judgment is based. In other words, you don't get to make a new decision as the Alabama Supreme Court that the Georgia court got it wrong. Instead, what you have to look at for deciding whether the Georgia court had a jurisdictional basis is to see whether the judgment on its face appears to be a record of the court of general jurisdiction. What does that mean? If the Georgia court had general jurisdiction over adoption itself, then that's all we look at. You know, it's not going to be a hard look or even a relitigation of that question in Alabama under the guise of full faith and credit. So then the court comes back and talks about the fact that the Georgia court entered this adoption decree. It concludes very starkly that that adoption decree was in, quote, the statutory grant of jurisdiction over all adoption matters from Georgia's own statutes. And they proceed to say that the Alabama Supreme Court simply cannot blow off that finding by trying to make take a hard look at whether the Georgia court should have acted. Now, they have some interesting points. You know, they talk about the fact that if you took Alabama seriously in this, then you would take any requirement in the Georgia statute and say that it's mandatory, and because it's mandatory, then, you know, it would become jurisdictional. In other words, they would be taking every element of an adoption and making it into a jurisdictional prong, and that, the court says, goes too far. And I think in closing, one thing to keep in mind is what the court says at the very end of its decision. And that's for full faith and credit really to work, for the states to be not in a position of second-guessing each other on things like orders, that the courts reviewing these claims about whether there is subject matter jurisdiction have to, and here I'm reading, be slow to read ambiguous words as meaning to leave the judgment open to dispute or as intended to do more than fix the rule by which the court should decide. Because if we're not slow to read these things as jurisdictional, then we will not give very much credit to full faith and credit and this time-honored social contract among the states will be severely undercut. And so in the end, what they do is they reverse the judgment of the Alabama Supreme Court and they remand back to the lower courts for proceedings not inconsistent with the opinion, which means at the end of the day, DL adopted these children with EL. And for EL just to preclude her for whatever reason, almost with a sleight of hand saying, oh, well, that adoption, it wasn't real, I think is a really difficult position. It would undercut our norms of adoption, and I think the court rightly says that that adoption has to be respected.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.